Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Thomas Frank Carr. We are getting ready to do that final blue-white game wrap-up. T. Frank, did you enjoy the game?
Yeah, I was actually at this one. I was at the blue-white game, so I am just like many of you in that when the game is over, I had no idea what happened. You know, I didn't have my... I have a special spot in the press box where I sit, and it's not special whatsoever. I just make sure I can see a TV because game versus broadcast, and then I have two different views, so I get kind of a instant replay. But here's the thing. Unless I can do that five or six times in a row, no idea what happened. So I had to go back and watch everything on Sunday. And I feel like I have a better idea of what happened than I did 20 minutes after the game. I don't blame people for coming away with a wrong impression about football when you're at the game or you're watching it live, because there's so much, Jim. There's so many things. Even in a scrimmage, there's so many things going on.
I like at the game, you get to see the things that you miss on TV, of course. You know, is there a wide open receiver deep that the quarterback missed that you won't see on TV, something like that? And I find it fascinating that you have a special place in the press box that you go to. So do I, but our priorities are a little different.
I think I know where you are.
I sit in the room where the food is. Okay.
Yes. So, although that is the best view by far in the press box. I know I'm giving away all the trade secrets here, but that is the best view and is right by the food.
Yes. And not to mention that they have creamery ice cream there in a little freezer. But yes, it does give you the best view. You could get right up against the glass to watch. You get a great view, and you get close to the food. All right. Probably a good segue talking about food, T. Frank, to talk about our new partners. We are teaming up with F45 Training Center in State College. What a great place. And they're having a special offer just for the Keystone Sports listeners. You get to try all of their classes for 2 weeks for free. Just make sure you take that first class before the end of the month, and your 2 weeks free starts with your first class. F45 is also the only fitness studio in State College to feature the in-body scanner. Hey, Frank, you and I were talking about this technology before we got started on the show. I am just so fascinated by this machine. And you get to use this during that 2 week free. You step on the machine, it tells you everything. It does, like if you get your body mass index, it doesn't differentiate between fat and muscle. So you can work out for a while, not gain or lose any weight, and think nothing happened. This will measure like the fat versus muscle. It even, I was really fascinated by this. It could tell you the difference between what muscle you have in your left side versus right arm. So it kind of even tells you probably whether you're left-handed or right-handed. Yeah. I think the most important thing is it shows how you progress, how you're doing. So anyway, if you want a little more information, you could call over there at 814-826-4045. Our guy JR is there to help you out with anything you need. All right, T. Frank, I've joked with you before whenever we review games in season. I'm like that coach who, after the game over the weekend, says, I can't tell you what happened till I see the film Monday morning. Me, personally, I can't tell you what happened until I talk to T. Frank to confirm things for me. So that's what we're going to do today. But before we get started with any specific questions, T. Frank, what are your impressions? What stood out to you, both either at the game live or in watching the tape of the game?
I think the main thing that stood out to me live was we're seeing them practice. So Penn State's offense only executed 11 personnel, meaning one tight end. Tyler Warren didn't play, so that's obviously part of the conversation when we talk about the tight ends and that section of the playbook, but they didn't get into anything too tight end. They have plenty of tight ends to do that, so not doing that tells me they wanted to work on specific things. So 11 personnel, three receivers versus the Lion, versus their nickel package and having guys on the field in that particular setup. So it's structured from the very get-go, and I think that's an important part of this conversation, but that doesn't mean they're showing nothing. You know, I thought We saw some stuff from Tom Allen, some unique blitzes. Jalen Reed gets a sack on Bo Prabula or a throwaway, whatever it was, on that first play where he's coming off the edge. They're doing some of the things I've talked about with Tom Allen in terms of rotating safeties in an unexpected way, blitzing from different areas. I'm still going through this and kind of going players, scheme, individual plays, things like that, trying to sort everything out in my mind. But more aggression from the defensive line than I had seen from Tom Allen previously. You know, more twists and stunts, more defensive line movement. So I think there's going to be a little more of a blend of what Manny Diaz did before, some of the institutional things they had done at Penn State. You know, every defense coordinator has those in their playbook. It's just how much do you use those things? So I think there's going to be a little more aggression. And that was one of the things I was curious about with Tom Allen and his defense and the ideas and concepts of more of a static front seven that plays certain ways, or are they going to be active and move? And I think it's one scrimmage. Maybe they were, again, just working on those concepts, but I did see more gap exchange than I was expecting. So that's one thing. And then from the offensive perspective, you didn't see any of the shifts, but you did see some motion almost exclusively from the tight end. You know, that's Andrew Rapplier going in motion from one side of the formation to the other. But we did get to see some 3x1 sets, some RPOs, some read options, and got a little bit of an insight and information into some of how that's going to work in this offense. So there were some good things from a conceptual, from a schematic standpoint that I think are interesting, but obviously are nowhere near the full picture. So, I think we can learn a good bit about Penn State's offense and general execution within that framework.
You talked a bit about Tom Allen and his defense. One of the topics of conversation over the last several weeks was this idea of a 4-2 defense using a third safety. How much of that did we see, T. Frank?
Well, Colin Dinkins, way more Colin Dinkins than I was expecting us to have a conversation about going into the game. So I apologize. Off the top of my head, I don't know if Colin is a corner or if he is a safety. Jalen Reed starts in that position, but on the blue team, and Dinkins made a lot of plays for the blue team, that's the lion position. It's a nickel position where they incorporate both corners and safeties into that matchup and situation depending, right? So that's an area where I have to go through and say, okay, who's playing the nickel? Who's playing the safety spot? Like, who's the field safety? Who's the boundary safety? I haven't gone like on those player-to-player details, but they were running the lion package specifically from that particular area. And that's where an area, I saw Cam Miller get some snaps there. I don't think AJ Harris got any because he was a primary boundary corner for the blue team, where outside corner, boundary meaning just the perimeter, not necessarily boundary or field. So there's some mixing and matching because the depth chart wasn't fully like, here are the ones and twos and everybody that would play in those situations, because they were filtering guys to either team. So a little bit of an incomplete on the Lions specifically in those areas, but you got to see a mix of different players. And I thought Cam Miller had a really good play on a screen pass from Ethan Grunkmeyer to Anthony Ivey, where he blew up Julian Fleming to get a tackle. And you know, in a situation where the defensive numbers didn't favor the secondary and they still made a play. So just a smattering of understanding of how they're going to play all that. Again, given the fact that they were going up against only 11 personnel and that didn't change throughout the game.
You mentioned AJ Harris. In watching the game live, I thought he had a wonderful game. What did you see?
Yeah, same thing. Physical. It's funny because we talk right now about how physical he is and how great of a job he did. I don't know specifically if I were to go in and watch, like, is this defensive holding? Is this pass interference? Because there's a fine line between being physical and holding. And when we get into the Big Ten season, all those things we might be saying now might be holding if it's interpreted by a different referee later on. So that's just one of those things where, remember last year Omari Evans flashed and half of it was him offensive pass interference shoving a guy off of him?
Yeah.
And then in the regular season, that's kind of what we saw. So I don't want to overreact to that either way, but he made the receivers work for it. And it's not just that he was holding. So I'm a little bit kidding, a little bit serious, but his physicality through the catch point, forcing guys. There's one particular play I'm thinking of where He's up against Malik McLean, and McLean puts a good move on him. He sets him up with outside leverage. He cuts back inside. He's running, I think it was a dig or a slant. And either way, it was a completion, but AJ Harris was there at the catch point and was making it really hard on the receiver. So even when he gave up some completions, the big one he gave up to Omari Evans, he's in deep third coverage and no linebackers were in the area to prevent that. That's part of the offense, right? So the RPO, the play action, sucked up the blue team linebackers and opened up a wide chasm for Evans to run, you know, a deep slant on top of the coverage there. So the biggest play he gave up, I wouldn't even put that fully on him because he's getting to his depth, and then the route is just completed in front of him. So generally a really good day from AJ Harris, for sure.
And I like when you see physical defensive backs, and T. Frank, I'm of the school, if it wasn't called, it's not holding, okay?
Yeah.
that's the way I look at it. And he also made the play on the pass into the end zone where It looked like he was in position and made a nice play there. So I thought that was very good.
I'm actually going to do a cut up of that because I was there watching them do those high point drills and watched Malik McLean do it properly and then saw him do it during the blue white game. We're going to get into where McLean should have and what he should have done. It's a quick kind of observational thing, but AJ Harris did a great job. The pass and the reception, not good on that particular play.
But I will take it. I'll look on the positive side.
Yeah.
The defensive player, I'll take that. And when you describe any defensive player, especially the DBs, as physical, I'm pretty happy with this. We only have a minute left in this first segment, but next I want to hit up to Abdul Carter and your thoughts on him. And I'll allow you to go and start it again in quarter two, but quickly your thoughts on him.
He's very fast. He rushes like an off-ball linebacker right now. And that's not just me. I know you talked to Landon Tangwall about this on one of your shows. He and I did a film room that came out on Monday. You can check that out at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. He went into some of the areas where Abdul is still pretty raw, some of the things that he needs to work on. But luckily, they're all on a technical scale, and there's things he can do to translate his skills more immediately. But we did get a sense of, on the scale of where he's going to be good and where he's going to win, probably can beat most offensive tackles in college football. But against good ones in big games, does he have the technique to get home? That's something Landon pointed out, and that's something that we can talk about in a little bit if you want.
All right, yes. Let's wrap up quarter number one. We'll pick that up right there with Abdul Carter when we come back.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He is T. Frank Carr. I am Jim Galante. We are doing our final blue-white game review. And when we wrapped up quarter number one, we were just getting into Abdul Carter and his play at defensive end.
Yeah.
And you brought up our colleague, Landon Tangwall, and we had a pretty good discussion about Abdul Carter. And it really just also tells you the things that I call a person we don't see in watching the game, but as a football player, especially as an offensive lineman, what he talked about was Abdul Carter's use of his hands, and that's the area he probably needs to work on, T. Frank.
Yeah, and he had some of the basics down. You know, he had the concept of those things, but making them more defined and using them with specificity, I think, is what Landon pointed out, and I think was pretty fair when you watch on film. The other thing that I also want to just bring to this conversation, so I'm not just rehashing what Landon said, is – Amin Vanover was the starter on the white team, which was the starting unit. The starting defensive line was at the edge position, Denai Dennis Sutton and Amin Vanover. James Franklin went to specifically praise Amin in his post-game press conference. That could be for a number of reasons, including the fact that the transfer portal opened this week, and just trying to do everything in your power to maintain good relationships with your own players who have the opportunity to go anywhere in the transfer portal that they want if they want to get them more, a little more money, you know, like all that stuff. But also, Amin was the starter and is the returning player at defensive end, and I think is one of the most productive per capita players on the team. So it's just that particular conversation about Abdul and everyone salivating about his potential and his talent and his athletic skill, and also his role right now. And that can change. You know, we've seen things change drastically from spring ball all the way to the start of the season. Abdul was a third down pass rushing specialist in that game, in the blue-white game. So as of now, that's his role. Speed rusher to go get the quarterback in obvious pass rushing situations. And to do that, to fold back into kind of the analysis of the position, in order to get there regularly and with efficiency and to do some of the things to make him a first-round draft pick at defensive end, which is what a lot of, you know, a big chunk of the reason he's doing this is that he needs to get better with his hands. He needs to get better at the position and learn and have some time on task. James Franklin talked about how the transition has gone faster than he expected. And I think that should be an indicator of how hard it is to change positions and to be a guy who goes from being a stand-up off-ball linebacker from his senior season in high school, played a little defensive end his junior year. I think he maybe played majority in his sophomore year. And then his final 2 years in high school, he's a linebacker. So for the last 3 or 4 years, he's played an entirely different position. And having that transition late in your career, late in air quotes here for college, I think that should put you on a realistic trajectory for what he can be at the position and what he is right now. So ahead of schedule, but still pretty raw when it comes to his ability to do the advanced things that the guys at that position have done for Penn State.
A couple things with that. I think the good news to this is that handwork is something you can work on.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, having that kind of speed and takeoff that Abdul Carter has, you can't coach that. That's special. But I'm also glad that you brought up Amin Vanover. And yes, I'm sure when James Franklin compliments him, part of that is, hey, you're going to have a role with this team. But I think there's also player who has chosen to stick around, even if he didn't have a frontline role. I think James Franklin, a lot of coaches admire when they do have that player who will stick around and get, you know what, credit to the guy for sticking around and working hard. And the fact that Penn State's defense rotates so many players, I've often joked, you know, a year ago, they had 20 starters on defense, okay, the way they rotate players. And Amin Vanover has earned the right to be part of that rotation, correct?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And that's going to be the interesting thing is with the way Jameel Lyons played, you could have four serious threats as a pass rusher to the point that somebody's not going to be on the field on third down, right? And you think Abdul's got to be on the field on third down, and Denai's got to be on the field somewhere on third down. So what defensive tackle and what other player are you taking off the field when you've got Jameel Lyons, who looks excellent? All of these players have a legitimate case to make that they should be part of these important sub packages and in the rotation. So it's going to be very good for Penn State throughout a long year where they need to have a lot of guys and keep players fresh, not just in game, but throughout the season. And just that particular position, I can foresee maybe a similar situation. You remember Chop Robinson in 2022, Nick Tarburton was the starter and that didn't really change, but Chop Robinson was the difference maker at the position. You know, like he got most of the meaningful snaps in big moments, especially as a pass rusher. And I'm not saying that Abdul won't start. I don't think it's the same here because obviously Chop was a younger player at that time. But Abdul and Amin and Denai, I can see a timeshare in a similar way. Maybe a better example would be when in 2022, when Penn State had Joey Porter Jr., Kalen King, and Johnny Dixon, and three guys that they saw as starters, and those guys kind of competed and rotated as who was the starter, but all three of them played major snaps during the season. So there's a precedent set where you can have three players at one position essentially have a starting role. And then, it, you know, to the point that James Franklin made, I don't know if we've ever named co-starters, but when you've got an or on the depth chart, it gives you the opportunity to play a bunch of different guys at that position.
And again, on defense, keeping the players fresh, rotating them in, you've got fresh players. Being that offensive tackle, having to play against someone fresh every down, every series, that's a good thing. Speaking of depth and staying on the defense just a little bit longer, we talked about A.J. Harris. How about the rest of the defensive backfield? It felt like going into this, we were concerned about cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel good about the rotation of cornerbacks that we saw?
This is an area where I have no opinion at the moment. I think partially because some of the offensive issues in the passing game, partially because of the wind. And then, but generally, you asked about the one particular position I don't really have a good opinion on, right? So I don't want to talk out of my butt on this one, but I think Cam Miller showed me some stuff in a positive way. I think the receivers made enough plays that it was not one-sided, but I can't tell you that the passing game in particular from the blue team was at all viable to have a good feel for the corners on that white squad. Because if I pull up the, I'm going to pull this up here. Yeah, they went 8 of 17 for 29 yards on the blue team passing. So there's not really anything I could tell you that's really at all worth it from the cornerback specific perspective.
All right, let's shift over to the offensive side of the ball where people have a lot of interest, and mm-hmm. let's start with the quarterbacks. I don't know if we could walk away with any opinion on Bo Prabhul and what he was dealing with on the blue team. A lot less talent around him. So let's jump right to Drew Aller. It's funny, I got reaction from people. I had one listener sent me a note saying, oh, it looks like Drew Aller is back in the horseshoe in Columbus the way he played. And I had other people come away with a pretty positive perspective on how he played. What did you see from him?
Bit of both. You know, like he looked more comfortable. I want to say that I think the process is good. There were times he's still in a compressed pocket, looks like he's panicking a little bit. You know, his body language and the way he's resetting and chopping his feet instead of getting through his progressions and having a base to throw from. I felt like sometimes he got up on his toes and that caused some issues. But they moved the pocket more. That was something we talked about in this offense. That came to fruition, some of those outside zone bootlegs, getting him away from the point, the launch point that's typical in the offense from the pocket. I thought the process looked good. He looked comfortable. He looked confident. I thought he managed pressure well, understanding he's not going to get hit. Everyone knows that. But at the same time, when you've got guys in your face, sometimes you just react. The issue was he was inaccurate. And, you know, completed 47% of his passes. So how much is the wind? I think that's a fair question. That's an open-ended question where I can't put a nail in this coffin and say that was bad. And how much of it was that this is not, I think we're seeing more and more of Drew. We're seeing him in different situations. We're seeing him a year afterwards, and we're seeing some improvements in his game that are then revealing some of these flaws. How much, it's an open question to me right now, how much of his game, when he's moved off the spot, it's not just catch and throw in rhythm, how does his accuracy suffer? Every quarterback is worse throwing off platform, even guys who are good at it. But how much worse? And for Drew, that's, to me, an open question coming out of this game. And Bo Prabhul is 1 for 2 for 7 yards with the white team. So I have no opinion of Bo's passing other than it was a rough day for him getting pressure in his face on almost every single play.
Yeah, that's the one where I don't think you could draw any conclusions. How about this was the first we saw at this level, Ethan Grunkmeyer?
Yeah, honestly, kind of the same thing. He was 4 of 8 with an interception. There's one play. I'll give you one play that I really liked from him. It was a cover 2. The defense rotated to a cover 2. I don't remember the initial pre-snap view, but he's looking to the field to his right, over top the right tackle. He works back to the backside of the play and finds Luke Reynolds running up in between the safety and the corner in the cover two hole. So in cover two, you got a deep safety covering half the field. They shade towards the sideline to protect that vulnerable area. And then the corner is in the underneath part of coverage in the flat. Now, corners can play that however they want. If they have no threats in the flat, they should drop and cover that hole more. The player in front there was Elliot Washington. He saw the running back leak out late, opened up the hole. Ethan saw it, hit it in rhythm. Perfect decision, perfect timing. And it looked like the ball just sailed on him because the wind was like 30 miles an hour at times. So, again, great process, great vision, great eyeballs. And I am very confident in Ethan's accuracy and his footwork and his mechanics. So to me, what we saw of Drew Aller throwing the ball down the field, some of those, when you're throwing with the wind, it's almost harder because you can't gauge how much loft and power to put on the ball and how much the ball is going to be taken by the wind. And I think that's an example of really good decision making, but, you know, the wind caught it.
All right, very good. That's it for quarter number two, T. Frank. When we come back, we're going to take your question. Stay tuned for that.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He is T. Frank. I am Jim. And this is time for Ask T. Frank. This is where we take your questions for T. Frank and he gives you the spectacular as always. If you want to send a question to T. Frank, real easy, just download our app, Keystone Sports, and you'll see the Ask T. Frank button. T. Frank, are you ready?
I hope so. I never know what to expect after something like this, so I'm gonna roll with it. Whatever we do, we're gonna do it right, I think.
All right. Well, we kind of talked about this, but I'm gonna throw it out there anyway. Josh from Morgantown says, is it just me? Or did Chop Robinson change numbers to number 11? All jokes aside, Abdul Carter had great burst, jump off the ball, and seemed to have similar skills as Chop. What was your assessment of Abdul Carter at defensive end? I know we covered a bit of that, but
yeah,
give Josh a little bit more.
So it's tough because I was doing this analysis with Landon and like, I am a person who doesn't, I don't do that thing where it doesn't matter who said it to you. Like you just take credit for it, 'cause you're the one saying it this time. The snap count, Abdul knows the snap count. So he's explosive. He's athletic. He's not going to be able to do that in every single game. So there's going to be some ups and downs. I think from, it didn't really change much for me. I think I was nonplussed. Is a great way to say it. It was what I expected. This is always those things where I don't want to be the I told you so guy or the guy who's. I talked about the transition not being the easiest thing and just an automatic thing back in February. So this is exactly what I was expecting of elite athlete, some basics here, but it kind of looks like he's an off ball linebacker that's rushing off the edge and learning how to beat a tackle is going to take time. And the thing I would say is, Josh, Jim mentioned you can get better at these things in the offseason, and that's true. But you can't necessarily simulate live reps in an excellent way. The feel of a tackle leaning on you, the feeling the balance and the shift of weight and when to push and when to pull, when to use those moves, that does take some live reps. And I don't think that in week one against West Virginia, he is going to be intuitive with his pass rushing. I think he can still kick the butt of almost any tackle from an athletic perspective, but it is going to be, he's going to have to learn these things kind of on the fly during camp and during the season.
I think that's a good assessment. We've got to be careful of our expectation level. But as you said, he has just a unique skill set that's going to help him win things. But we also got to be aware, new position, he's still learning.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Fred in Quakertown. Fred says, a name I didn't hear was Alex Birchmeier. Did he play? What is his status?
So I have a partial view of how Alex did. And of course, like, we're working with broadcast copy here. So this is one of the few games where I don't have access to a copy of all 22 because the only people to do is Penn State. So there is some, I'm going to leave open for, I don't know, but I did get some views of Alex through spring camp and in the blue white game. Not great. Shout out to Ty Blanding, by the way, who did a great job, who did flash and got a clean beat of Alex on a pass rep. But we're talking about a sample size that I can evaluate Alex on of maybe 2 minutes in practice and then 4 reps total in the game. I don't want to go too hard after this, but the general feel I have of Alex is that it's not clicking yet. So athletically, you know, he's a great athlete. I think he's stronger. I think all those things are there, but he's got to put it all together. He's got to learn to be an offensive lineman and not an athlete on the offensive line. And I think those things, some guys take a little bit longer. I don't think you should give up on Alex Birchmeier. I don't think you should take this particular conversation and say, okay, it's over. This is a guy with a lot of talent, but he's got to figure it out. And I think that's the next step for him.
You know, T. Frank, I'm going to play both sides of this. Now, Birchmont, he's going to be an interior lineman, correct?
He was at left guard specifically in this game. Okay. And he had been playing right guard for a lot of spring. So I think that's also a thing that we have to point out here in fairness to Alex that, you know, some guys, it is harder for them to shift left and right. And he has played, I think, primarily in his career on the right side, even dating back to high school.
Now, we know several offensive linemen did not play,
yep.
But on the white team, which was the closest to a starting team, we saw Cooper Cousins out there right away,
yep,
starting at right guard and then also making the shift to center. So it's exciting with all of the things that you talk about with a second year player in Birchmeier. Here you have Cooper Cousins, who I keep repeating this, should still be in high school,
yeah,
you know, getting out there so quickly. So kudos to him. But I think we also now, on the other hand, have to realize that Alex Birchmeier, he's only going to be a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
And we've talked about with offensive line that it can take some time to get there. Right, T. Frank? This is not one of those positions where you're automatically out there as a freshman.
Well, very few positions are you automatically out there as a freshman. It is not easy to do. I think this is the part where people don't understand. Football is actually hard. From a mental, let alone a physical perspective, to not just be able to do it, but to do it with confidence. That Javen Williams had a rough day. I don't see a guy playing with confidence right now. I see a guy who knows the technique and is executing the technique, but is thinking about that. Until the little details become second nature, you can't unlock your full potential. There were moments in the game. He had a great reach block on an outside zone where he sprung Quentin Martin for an explosive run. So there are elements of all these guys succeeding, but there are areas where they are still young football players, especially in the offensive line where there are so many different techniques. There are so many different things you got to understand. And you mentioned grown man strength on the interior is pretty important. And being young, it's hard when you're 305 pounds, but the guy you're going up against is 260 of anthropomorphic, like, humanoid monster. You know, like, Abdul Carter is a different athlete at 260. He's probably stronger than guys who are 30% bigger. So, you know, this is a long way to say these young offensive linemen are still young, as you pointed out. So they need time to develop, and it's not all just repeating myself of like, let's chill. Let's just chill on this. Take it as a data point, and we'll revisit this when we have more information on the timeline, if it's getting better or worse.
And that's why, you know, when you bring up, or I brought up, Cooper Cousins as an example, understand he's the exception to the rule. He's not the rule. And we got to be aware of that. All right, let's go to Henry in Arlington, who says, what is going on with Keandre Lambert-Smith? I know he could be gone by the time you read this, but why didn't he just leave in January? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so there's a lot. And by the way, we've talked about this a couple times on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel. We've talked about this at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. Some of the more specific details I want to leave there. But Keandre is a mercurial person, and some of these decisions are about the vibes, for the lack of a better word. And some of the things I understand of the situation is he did not feel like he was being treated as if he were a veteran. He still felt like a kid in the eyes of the coaches, and other players were being treated as veterans, and he wanted the respect of being the number one wide receiver. Did he earn that respect? Did he earn that with his daily approach? Did he earn that with his commitment to work? Did he earn that on all those things? I can't tell you that part. I can tell you that these feelings, including some of these things wrapped up in NIL and some of these things wrapped up in off-the-field, non-football things in a relationship between people, it had reached its conclusion. And apparently it hadn't reached its conclusion in January, but it did at the end of April. There are some things that we can talk about and speculate about in that particular area, but those are, I guess, you know, leave it at that door. So it's unfortunate for Penn State. I think it leaves them in a situation where you're still looking for some dynamism out of the offensive receiver position. You would have liked to have him. I think he could have helped, but at the same time, if he wants to move on and he's not fully engaged and fully committed, then it's best he goes elsewhere, right?
And I'll throw into this, James Franklin used the expression, not specifically about Keandre Lambert-Smith, but I think he could have been, where he said 99% of the time, the decision that's made is good for both the player and the team. Yeah. I get the sense, forget, it can't always be just strictly about talent. There's a lot more going on, relationships and so on. I think this might be turn into addition by subtraction, that it's better if he doesn't want to be here, that he moves on. But to Henry's point, and I do agree with this, he probably should have left in January. It probably 100%. Would have been better off for him and for the team if that decision would have been made. And from what I've heard on the outside, when you look in and see, you know, when they changed offensive coordinators, those last couple games, he was not part of the game plan, it seemed. It seemed like the team had already made a decision about him. And
so I don't want to.
No, go ahead.
There is truth there, but every route is viable. So if Keandre is running a 9 route or a clear out route where the general designation of that is, you know, if this route is open, throw it. But the kind of the concept is he's going to pull a defender out so that somebody else will be open underneath. Drew Aller threw him some of those balls where they're on clear out routes. So there were opportunities for him, but he was doing, he shifted from the offensive focus to doing a lot of dirty work. And I have mixed feelings about it, because I can understand if it feels like you're being punished because you're running 60 yards on three plays or two plays, and you know you don't feel like there's an opportunity to catch the football. But on the same in the same breath, he got 84 targets during the season, and we saw middling results. And I think that both sides of that are fair. In a different offense, he might have better opportunity. And this is, I guess, where I'll leave this particular conversation. Penn State fans probably have some hard feelings here. Don't be surprised if he goes to the right situation and puts up 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns and is a guy who is seen as a breakout star somewhere else.
T. Frank, that's it for quarter number three, but we're going to pick up this conversation as soon as we get back for quarter number four.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training and State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. It's quarter number four. We are having fun talking about the blue-white game. We took our questions for T. Frank in quarter number three. And now, quarter number four, I want to get back to the game itself, T. Frank, and I'm going to use as our segue the last question that we had in our Ask T. Frank segment, and it was about Keandre Lambert-Smith, and that leads into the conversation about, okay, what now? What going forward? And my thinking is Keandre Lambert-Smith, he had experience. He obviously has some talent, but there's been a lot going on there. And I don't need you to answer this question of might they be better off separating. Don't need you to get into that. But let's talk about where the team goes from there. And did we see anything in the blue-white game that could help us? My initial thought is Lambert-Smith is someone who would be in the slot. I think that's where there's some potential with Caden Saunders and Liam Clifford. You tell me, what did you see and what are you hoping to see going forward?
Yeah, so I remember in 2020, Journey Brown got hurt. And I said at the time, if there is one position where you can lose a player and not have a major problem, running backs are more replaceable than other players, other positions. And then they had a god-awful season, and they couldn't run the football. Noah Kane, Kevon Lee, like they had some issues after Journey Brown couldn't play football anymore. So I don't ever want to do that again, where you lose talent, you are less talented. Full stop. But the area where they had more depth, as you pointed out, we talked about this, of Keandre Lambert-Smith coming back for another year, kind of placed a logjam of guys that we had seen specifically play in the slot. And I think the guy who has the composite skills and talked about being even more explosive after the game is Caden Saunders. And we got a mixed bag. Of course we got a mixed bag. We couldn't just be all positive. Couldn't just be like, yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about. Of course, like he had to have two catches for 27 yards with a drop and like a bad drop. And then a couple of opportunities that miscommunications, Drowler missed him down the field. I was encouraged that Caden has the ability, even before the movement with Keandre Lambert-Smith, that he was going to have a role in this offense as an explosive athletic slot receiver. Liam Clifford, he is going to be what he has been. He's just steady. A good receiver, catches the football, probably going to get a bunch of first downs, probably going to be a chain-moving guy who runs great routes and is where the quarterback needs him to be. A lot of times with these volatile players that can be great or drop the football, like what you need sometimes is just a layup. And Liam Clifford, at his very core, is a receiver layup, where you're going to feel very good about the fact that he's going to catch the ball and get the yards that are there. But really, it becomes, where's the focus in the offense going? And you look, Andrew Rapelier had 8 targets. Trey Wallace had 7. So there's a bunch of different ways you can do this, right? But what we saw during the blue-white game, with a very specific limited personnel set of exactly 11 personnel, we saw Trey Wallace get the majority of the targets and look good. And I think put things on tape where there's a connection between him and Aller, and he is explosive, and he brings that dynamism to the team that it needs. You don't have to operate from the slot. And this is the last thing I'm going to say on Lambert Smith. The reason we're talking about him in the slot is not because it's preferable to have a guy operate from the slot. It's an option. But he played outside and had to go in the slot because it wasn't as effective. So if Trey Wallace can be a guy who operates outside a la a Jahan Dotson for Penn State in 2021, that gives you more options and flexibility. We talk about this whole thing with wide receiver one, who's going to be the number one receiver, and we talk about Keandre Lambert-Smith from a, you know, volatility, explosive play percentage, all those things. Being the number one wide receiver, there's a bunch of different factors, and it doesn't mean who gets the most yards or targets. It's how are you shaping the offense, and how are you distributing the targets, and where? And I think with Wallace in this situation, I'm not saying it's going to work, but he can play on the outside.
Very good. And like I said, I think sometimes players need opportunity. And I liked your description of Liam Clifford. And a year ago, I think we would have taken those things. Yeah. Run good patterns, move the chains, get the first down. I would have taken that last year. Let's talk about a couple other positions on the offensive side. I thought it was real fun to see the battle at running back where Nick Singleton, Catron Allen didn't play. And again, I look at these things as a fan, T. Frank. I was perfectly fine with that. I wanted to see these young guys. I liked what I saw. What did you see from them?
So you're telling me you liked Quentin Martin running the ball for two touchdowns on two carries and averaging 10 yards a carry. That was, you were a fan of that. I don't understand.
As a casual fan, I'm going to say, yes, I liked it. But I'll reiterate, T. Frank.
Yeah.
I'm a layperson. I don't know. You tell me. Is that
first
good?
First off, everyone got David Kensey'd during this particular game because David Kensey wears number 25. Quentin Martin wears number 25. There was a whole thing this spring about which 25 was out there. And James Franklin mentioned after the game, yeah, we didn't have Quentin for a good number of practices this spring, so we didn't get to see a whole lot of him, but he looked good in the blue-white game. We went there. I had a whole thing. A conspiracy theory about why they had two 25s out there. Because the other thing is David Kensey, he is a run-on running back who wore 27 when we first met him. I believe he was wearing 27 at some other point, or he was 27 on the roster at some other point. So he has bounced between two numbers. None of this matters to the whole conversation about Quentin Martin, but I just needed to say it because it was driving me crazy. I was talking with the Penn State like information staff at the press box being like, hey, I think we got the wrong guy because Quentin Martin had carries on both teams. So if you're looking at the box score, that's not all Quentin Martin. And I even think the two carries for 21 yards, he had another carry that wasn't a touchdown. So none of those stats, he looked good. He looked natural. He ran the ball with good vision. I think he had a good feel for bouncing the ball, following his blocks, and he just looked skinny. Like that's the last thing is like he just needs to run with a little more size and, you know, I don't know. He was in the open space more than we've seen a Penn State running back in recent years. So that's a positive sign. Again, it's the blue team. It was not the ones versus the ones. So really good first impression. More information would be great. You know, I'd love it if I could see all of spring practice, but you know, even then he wasn't there. It was David Kensey.
How about Cam Wallace? What'd you think of him?
Good runner. You know, this is something we've been talking about where he looks good. He looks the part and he performed 7 carries, 36 yards, you know, a couple of tough runs. He was one of the few players that ran between the tackles and actually like had to grind out some yardage in a game where they only carried the ball only 22 times on the blue team. And he led everybody with 7 carries, knowing that Bo Prabula was the other one with 6. So they ran the ball very little. Comparatively. So I thought he looked good. I thought he looked like a guy who can contribute this year. Does he look like he is on par with Catron Allen and Nick Singleton? No. But looked good. I think that's an important thing is to say he looked good. I think that competition between him and Quentin Martin is going to continue about who's going to be the running back three, who's going to have those special quality snaps and sub packages, and who's going to be the threat on the field as that third running back if they go to those packages, which exists in this offense. So I think that's just we got a good taste of both these guys looked good. They both look competent. The depth of that position is deep this year, and that's a good thing when you're going to rely on it a lot in this offense.
Yes, and I realize that's the third team back, but that could become important, especially if somebody gets nicked up. The other part I look at, and I know in college football, you shouldn't look ahead a full season, but after this year, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, they'll be gone. I feel more comfortable about the running game come 25. Again, I know that's a long ways away.
They have three running backs in the class of 2025, so they're thinking about it too. They have had seven in the last three years, if you go back to Wallace and Montgomery. Oh, by the way, London Montgomery, natural runner. He is a really good running back, just not big enough yet. And, you know, I think he's a guy who's got a spark of creativity. He's got talent as a positional player. So, I don't want to not include him. He had the one really nasty move that got him, 11 yards on the
11 yards.
Yeah. That was really good.
I'm going to use the word nifty with the move that he made. It was really slick to see. All right, let's talk a little bit offensive line, and I'll throw back in there Cooper Cousins. I think the fact that they threw him in there with the first group, I'm not calling it first team because we had so many guys out, but I thought it was him there with that first group at guard, and then a couple series in moving over to center. What was your analysis of Cooper Cousins and our first real look at him?
Good. Knowing that I haven't gone through the full film to look at him individually in all of those situations, I was doing it a little bit before we came on air here to record. We record on Monday, so like it's pretty early in the week. I haven't gone through all these things. I got through some of the guard reps, and I noticed him in my first run through moving guys off the ball, difference making run blocks against other true freshmen. So, Cook, Gilliam, and a couple other guys on that blue team that are going to be good football players. Like I'm fairly confident looking at them that they're good football players, but not Big Ten defensive tackles. I'm not predicting he's going to maul dudes that are twice as, 2 or 3 years older than him, but looked good. Looked competent, looked like a good pass protector, all those things, quality first showing for us to see Cooper Cousins. And again, looked the part physically. So all those things are checking the box. Some of when the difficulty gets ramped up, you see him against the ones at some point, if we ever get to see that, that will be more indicative of his play come the fall. But again, he's been above his peers in terms of his readiness and projection because he dominated against comparative age and classmates.
In the half minute we have left, how about the other offensive linemen? Rucci, Javen Williams, Nick Dawkins,
Vega looked good. Obviously the snaps were an issue for Dawkins. Javen had a rough day. I thought Rucci was not as athletic as I thought, a little stiff, but overall got to his blocks. So I think encouraging stuff there. So the white team had a good showing. I think that they looked like a competent unit, despite some of the pressure issues that they had from the defense. There were some good signs there too.
All right, T. Frank, that will be it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Landon Tangwall. We've teamed up with F45 Training and State College and their team of certified coaches to bring you an exciting opportunity. Starting Monday, April 15th, and running all the way through April 30th, Keystone Sports Network listeners are able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks for free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in group class environments. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress with their in-body scanning, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before the end of the month to take advantage of this limited offer. Go sign up now.